Tov. We're learning together with Hashem's help.
It's a consolation, I guess.
Masechet Sanhedrin 1, Kaf Dalet Amud Aleph 24a. We have learned in this Gemara how to understand our Mishnah. Our Mishnah said three things, three rules of the Mishnah. Rabbi Yaakov, what are the three rules of the Mishnah? In simple terms, not what they mean, just the Mishnah, not the explanation, just the basic Mishnah had three rules. In general, don't need details.
One about the judges.
Yeah.
The one let it get picks one judge. Yeah, the one picks the second judge, and the two judges that they pick picks the third judge.
Yeah, rule number one. Rule number two.
About getting two and three wrong between disqualifying witnesses, whether a witness or a judge is a relative or hustle, they can be disqualified, and it's determining whether you need two witnesses to disqualify the judge or the witness, I'm getting this wrong, or you can have the litigant and a witness disqualify them.
Okay, very good.
And
okay, I'm going to move to Rabbi Abraham. Rabbi Abraham? Yeah. Please give me your understanding of the Mishnah. Mishnah has three rules. Three rules in the Mishnah. No, what are the three rules? It's from the top. First rule of the Mishnah is
choosing, each one chooses a judge.
Uh-huh.
And then either the two judges choose a third judge or the leader choose a third judge.
Okay, that's rule number one. Rule number one. Rule number two.
Number two. This one can pursue the Dayan judge of the other one.
Yep. Very good. That's good enough. That's according to that's Rabbi Meir. Hachamim say. They said Nachon is an expert. They exactly said that. They said as an expert you can't. They also said you can only. When can you possess a judge? This man, Shemavi Raya. Shehu Karovo Pasuk. Right, okay, that's rule number two. And rule number
three.
Okay. Very good. Okay, so that's the Mishnah. So we spent all the Gemara learning what that Mishnah meant. That's the Gemara. We finished doing that now. We finished that yesterday. The rest of the Gemara now is just Agadah telling us about most of it is about the difference between the students of Eretz Yisrael and the students of Babel. Different, just as Agadah, Babel's really bad and Eretz Yisrael's really good. That's pretty much in a nutshell, but we get two pages of Agadah now, telling us in various different pasukim that. So that's the
now that we've made
structure
all the
of that Gemara. Well, it depends. The question whether or not we're still students of Babel, we're still learning Talmud Babli. So we're still definitely in some respect in Babel still, even though we're living in Eretz Kodesh. We're still living in Babel to an extent.
So we're basically in a transition period.
No, we're still doing Imbanon. Tov. Until we're not. When we're not, then we're not. Keherifying. I don't know, maybe you can say it's a transition, or you can say until it changes. Okay, so yesterday we finished the explanation of that Mishnah. The question is everyone happy to move on, or do you want to go back over anything that we did?
Going back won't
help. Yaakov? Going back won't help. What's the use of?
I'm game for anything.
Game for anything. So then let's move forward. 24A1, Kaf Dalet Amud Aleph. Gufa. 10 lines down, maybe a bit more. Gufa. Amar Reish Lakish.
Hi, sir. What are you?
Amar Reish Lakish. Gufa. Okay. What did Reish Lakish say earlier? Do we remember Reish Lakish's position? Reish Lakish was the first one to try to explain the Mishnah. We rejected him. But what did he say? He tried to explain it by saying, that that we should read witnesses, not witness in the single. We should read witness in the single, not witnesses. And to explain it, that how do you puzzle the other person's witness when there's only one? Very simple. If he only brings one witness, you can puzzle it. Very nice.
But that's a given that you're required to have two witnesses.
So that's a given, which is one reason why the Mishnah wouldn't tell you if it's obvious. But also, the truth is you have to learn it somewhere. So even a given, unless it's a given meaning it's written explicitly in the Torah.
But even if it's written exclusively in the Torah, that doesn't have to be brought up in the Mishnah?
No. So if it's been written exclusively in the Torah, specifically, thou shalt not kill, for example. So you wouldn't have a Mishnah saying, thou shalt not kill. What are you trying to tell me? There's something new.
And then bring in all the details.
If you brought the details, maybe. But it would have to have a reason for being there. You know, the Mishnah doesn't tell me something I already know. But here, if it's the case of one witness you're not allowed to bring, if I don't have that in the Torah specifically, then I might need a Mishnah to tell me. I know that, but I only know it because I've learned the oral law. But if it wasn't already explicit in the Torah, then I might well need a Mishnah to tell me that one witness you can possibly. So I need to learn it from somewhere.
Okay.
But here, the reason it was rejected, it was not on the grounds of it being too obvious. It was rejected on the grounds that the reading of the Mishnah was exact insofar as it said witnesses, plural. It doesn't say he can possibly his witness in a single. So when... So Reish Lakish said... Right. So what happened? So Rabbi Meir originally tried to explain the law of disqualification of judges by saying that the Hold on. Right. Toby, it was complicated Gemara. So Rabbi Meir was first talking about the judges. And he said that the reason why the litigant was able to disqualify the judge was because they weren't learned. They were like the courts of Syria. They were secular courts, or at least secular in terms of not being Baki in Halakha. And because of that, the litigant was allowed to reject them, because he could say, they're not appropriate to deal with my case, they don't know the full halakha. So the litigant can say, sorry, I need a judge that's qualified, that knows what he's talking about. Going to Rabbi Meir. Al-Khabib said, no, if they're considered to be experts, then we don't reject them. But that proved the problem. Why? Because we can link witnesses to judges and say that they were similar. Just like judges are given the credence of being experts, so too witnesses are deemed to be experts in their testimony. Meaning they can't be challenged in their testimony because no one else saw it, no one else was there. So although we can believe or disbelieve the witness, we can't actually challenge their testimony. They're considered to be experts insofar as their testimony can't be challenged because no one else is there. You know, you can challenge them, but they have an aspect in which they're the expert. They were the person there. So you can't say to him, you didn't see what you saw. What do you mean? I was there. How can you tell me what I saw? I'm the expert. And to that extent, they can't be challenged.
He could be an expert liar.
No, you're right. You're right. But an expert could be like that too. Like, just you can have an expert in the realm of, I know, nuclear physics when it comes to testify on the stand. No one else can challenge him because no one else in the courtroom has a clue about nuclear physics. He's an expert, right? He could still be lying. But to the extent that he knows something that no one else knows, he's considered to be an expert in that. The same with a witness, to the extent that he, apparently, right, on the face of it, knows something because he was there, no one else knows it. So he's considered in some way to be an expert.
You can challenge what he says, but you can challenge who he is.
You can challenge whether you believe him or not. So you don't have to believe him. So you told me that you saw him, yeah? What colour shirt was he wearing? I don't know. I didn't think he was there. I think he was lying. Right? He was hesitating. He wasn't sure. He contradicted himself. Right? I'd have to believe him.
Well,
I think
didn't we cover this earlier in which the judges were saying something about fig leaves?
Yes. The thickness of the fig stem. That's a question about how far we need to do drisha and harika. How far we need to drill down. How far do you need to drill down a witness to be sure that he's a credible witness? So in that Gemara, Rachot, maybe, I don't know where it is, they asked the witnesses even to the size of how thick the fig stems were. And the Machloket in that Gemara, and the other side was, you don't need to ask them that much, that's too much, it's going too far. But one side held no. That's the level of clarity that they need to have, and if they don't have that clarity, then you can't rely on their testimony. No.
Then we have the whole example of the idea of the false witness. I'm sorry, I'm down with a cold.
I'm not sure. So, but anyway, back to Agumar, Rabbi Meir was talking about the judges and saying how they can be disqualified or not, because they're considered to be experts. So at least according to Hachamim, you can't disqualify someone who's considered to be an expert. The same is true with a witness. A witness is considered to be an expert, and you can't disqualify someone who's considered to be an expert on the same logic that the Hachamim are using for not disqualifying judges, because they're experts. Therefore,
but assuming they're not pasul or relatives.
Yeah, anyone who holds that they're pasul or relatives, they can be disqualified. But assuming they're not, you can't disqualify them because they're considered to be experts. Therefore, Reish Lakish rejected Rabbi Meir's line of reasoning. And Reish Lakish said on Kaf Gimel Amud Aleph, three lines from the bottom. Beginning of the line. Amar Reish Lakish, Per Kadosh, Ya'amah Devar Zeh, Taneh Edoch. Can it be that a holy mouth would say something like this, Rabbi Meir? Can't be. Therefore, teach witness in the singular. probably like Rabbi Meir tried to explain it, because of this problem with the expert factor. Because of that problem, Reish Lakish said, no, Rabbi Meir, a holy mouth like Rabbi Meir would not have taught something like that. Therefore, I'm going to explain it differently. I'm going to teach witness in the singular. We then subsequently threw that out, but at least to start with, Reish Lakish is challenging Rabbi Meir as saying something apparently not very smart for someone with such a holy mouth. Apparently that's what he's saying. Okay? Yeah? So far so good?
Mm-hmm.
So the Gemara is now going back to that incident and focusing on it and saying Gufa. That the text, the body of what we learnt over there. Amar Reish Lakish, when Reish Lakish said Pekadosh Yamad Devazeh Tenedo. Right? How can a holy mouth say something like this? Teach instead Edo, his witness. So Gemara says, Eini, is it so? Can it be that Reish Lakish would say something like that about Rabbi Meir? Bahama Ola. But Ola said, Haro'er Reish Lakish for Beit HaMidrash. The person who saw Reish Lakish in the Beit HaMidrash, Ke'ilu Oker Harim B'tochanan Zebazeh. It's as if he uprooted mountains and he ground them one against the other. They could use him on Kavish 1 right now.
Mm-hmm.
They
right.
Could use him on Kavish 1.
I can
lo kol echad obed kokach.
Lo obed?
Lo kol echad. Achadim obed yoter tov
Do I need to get more of those?
They're coming towards the end of their shelf life. They're coming towards the end of their shelf life.
Okay.
They still work, but they're not so clear.
I'll pick some up tomorrow.
Yes. So grinding mountains, one against the other.
Now, what were you saying about they need them on what?
Kvish 1. Kvish 1, the road. They're grinding up the mountains right now.
Why are they doing that?
To widen the road.
Why do they just get rid of the cars?
Well, that's an alternative. They could put a tram, a light rail down there, but
yeah, I mean,
they
the light rail is far more efficient than cars.
Yeah, I don't think they can get that many cars on the light rail.
Just get rid of the cars.
Anyway, they're grinding mountains, and it says in the Navi that at the end of days that mountains will be ground into dust. Exactly what they're doing right now. They have special machines that grind the mountains into dust.
They're putting tunnels in.
That too, but they're actually grinding the mountains down into dust. That's what they. That's how they take away. To
pave,
it's all used up. Oh, yeah. They're using it in the valley between the Vaseret Zion. It's amazing piece of project, like a piece of engineering that they're doing there, cutting through mountains. They did the same in Modi'in. Modi'in's built on mountains and they cut a lot away in order to.
And aren't they building a railroad tunnel to Jerusalem?
Yeah, that's all. It's all happening right now. Get ready, get your front seat. So, apparently, my wife read a post from Mark Brody yesterday on the website, on the Breslin World website. So, a bit like what Joel was saying yesterday, but I've already translated an article from Avarish. Avarish wrote that when Moshiach comes. It's not like party time. It's not like woohoo. Right? Moshiach means the time of Moshiach, we have to do Torah and mitzvahs, but just with no reward. With no reward. No reward. Right? You have to fulfill all Torah and all mitzvahs with no reward. But if a person's interested in doing that, then they're shayach for Moshiach. They're appropriate to live in that time. And if you don't want to do that, so you're not going to be around. It'll be like self-selecting. If you want to be part of that world where you serve Hashem, just dafka, just because, no reason, then fine, that's what the world of Moshiach is. But if you don't want to be in that world, if that doesn't interest you, so you're not going to be there, there's nothing else to do there. It's like you can't hang around and watch TV in the background while everybody else is serving Hashem. There's no other option. Like, that's the world now. The world now, you can opt out and you can go watch TV or sit in the pub or do whatever you want, drink sip coffee. Right, that's now. But in the time to come, there's no coffee bar to hang around in the back. There's no pool bar to while away the time. I don't know, but there's there won't be any shtuyot. There's serving Hashem. I'm guessing. Who am I to say there's no TV?
I was reading somewhere.
Yeah, channel, but I don't know.
I was reading somewhere, either Rabbi Elizabeth's site or somewhere else, where it says the gates of Israel will be closed when Mashiach comes, so that those that were here, that put the effort into developing Eretz Israel and working on Torah and everything else, will get the benefits of Mashiach, and those that didn't will have to wait.
Right.
I don't know.
Didn't we learn that about a house in the north? We capture a city. The question is, do you close all the gates? It says that we have to leave one open just so people can get out.
Yeah, you surround them and you give them a chance to leave.
Yes, we had the whole issue there, bro.
Maybe the trains come again. Transfer.
So, interesting times.
Yes.
So anyway, Reish Lakish in the Beit Midrash, he would, if you saw him, it was like Lahavdil, one of those guys in the truck on Kvish Echad, grinding up the mountains. He was uprooting mountains and grinding against one another. What does it mean he was uprooting mountains? What's the simile? Obviously he's learning Torah in a Beit Midrash, he's not cooking, right? So what was he doing?
Okay, that
could be. But uprooting mountains and grinding them together is a very active physical what or who are the mountains? What or who are the mountains?
I'm putting my foot in my mouth. Torah scholars.
Rabbi Yaakov said Torah scholars. Torah scholars. Talmidei Chachamim. Usually Torah, the mountains are often a simile for Gedolim. Right? The water will cover all the highest mountains. Even the greatest people. Right? And the flood, a flood of heresy. There will be a flood, and it will cover even the highest mountains, and even in Eretz Israel. Even the flood of heresy that will cover even the highest.
Isn't that happening now, or has been happening now for the last 100 years?
Nothing, exactly. So
close?
Yeah. So I think you're asking me, but so Torah, so uprooting Torah scholars and grinding them together into dust is really uprooting. He takes Gedolim, Talmidei Chachamim, their shitot, uproots them. What is that to uproot? Uproot means to take them from the source.
From the ground.
This is based on nothing. And then grinds them into dust. Right? You see that they weren't solid, they weren't standing on anything, they were just dust. It was a huge sort of mountain, and now it's like a bucket full of dust that comes out of it.
What he's doing is taking the foundation of their teachings
and
pulling them up, analyzing them.
Yeah, and then showing why it's, and then grinds it into dust, and it was just like nothing. Right? That's pretty. That's taking, the shita of a Talmid Chacham who comes and explains. Let me explain the Mishnah. Talmid Chacham says, "I'm going to explain the Mishnah as well. This is what it means." Amosha Kish comes along and says, "I'm going to show you exactly why that one doesn't work, doesn't fit, it's broken, it's challenged, it's got a problem."
But he's not doing this through Arians.
No, he's doing it through Torah, scholarly Torah knowledge. It's a huge thing to be able to uproot someone else's Torah. You have to. Can't just say it's not like uprooting Torah. This is nonsense. I don't like it. That's not rooting. That's just throwing mud at it. But uprooting it, you have to. You can be sure that the Torah scholar that got uprooted is blown away by the intelligence or the clarity of Reish Lakish doing it.
So we're not covering the equivalent of, for them, the Sadducees or for us to be the Reformed, Conservative, whatever.
No, I don't think this is here. We saw that Rabbi Yochanan, after Rabbi Yochanan had his falling out, let's say, with Reish Lakish, and Reish Lakish passed away as a result of that falling out, that Rabbi Yochanan, they tried to give Rabbi Yochanan a new chavruta. And what did Rabbi Yochanan say? He gave him some really qualified, huge Talmidei Chachamim. And they agreed with him, because Rabbi Yochanan was huge. Rabbi Yochanan was head of the Gadol Ador. But he said, Reish Lakish used to give me, how many was it? 58 arguments on every single point I raised. So Reish Lakish is that was his forte. He was a fighter, he was an attacker. And some people have, everyone has a lot to bring to the table. Reish Lakish's strength was uprooting, fighting, challenging, breaking, finding what the problem was. Okay. Yeah. So here the question is on the Aini. The Aini is the question. Is it true that Reish Lakish would have said something like this about Rabbi Meir, when we know that Reish Lakish was a person who worked rooted mountains? That question is still not 100% clear. What is it? So first of all, he appears to be challenging Rabbi Meir. And then, it depends what, there's a number of different ways, it's not clear, a number of different ways of trying to work out what Reish Lakish was saying, or what we thought he was saying, what this proof comes to do. Does this proof come to challenge, or it comes to support that fact?
On the other
So Ravina, right, so let's see. So now we go back to Rabbi Meir and see if this helps. Maybe not, but let's see. Amar Ravina, Ravina said, wait a minute. Kol ha-ro'eh Rabbi Meir b'Beit Midrash, anyone who saw Rabbi Meir in the Beit Midrash, ki'ilu okeh harei harim, not just mountains, but harei harim, the highest of the mountains. And grind one against each other. You should know that Rabbi Meir was even more powerful. Right? Which is not surprising, because Rabbi Meir was a Tanna, and Rabbi Reish Lakish was a Amora. But they can still they were still grinding according to their level. But how does that help us? So the Gemara says Hafi Kama. This is what it must mean. We'll go back, we'll learn from what we get the answer to what must have been the problem. Right? So we get to the answer now. Hachi kama, this is what we were trying to say. Bore kama machavin zedaze. Come and see how much they love each other. So because of the fact that we now say hachi kama, how much they love each other, must have been that before we had a havramina, we had an assumption that he was attacking him. I'm saying no, he's actually showing him respect. So what is he showing? How is he showing him respect? So Rashi answers and says he's showing him respect because he said Pekadosh. He called Rabbi Meir a Pekadosh. And when he said, how can this holy mouth say such a thing? What he was trying to do was, he was trying to say that Rabbi Meir is so holy that there must be a reason why he said it. He was trying to fix Rabbi Meir and not argue against him, apparently, according to the commentary on the Rashi that I read.
Oh, do you want to cover Rashi?
Not really. It's not so easy. Rashi, I can read the Rashi, but it doesn't really didn't help me. Rashi says like this: Bo ure'e kama, come and see how much. About 20 lines down in the Rashi. Kama, that is to say, lo atmohi ka miter hemi mehi. I'm not really sure how to translate that. It's not, he's not being surprised at him. He's not saying that he was surprised at Rabbi Meir, that Rabbi Meir would say such a thing. Ella, rather, Hachi Kama, this is what he's saying. Bara'e Kama Bnei Eretz Yisrael, Machavir Zedzeh. Come and see how much the Bnei Eretz Yisrael, those who live in Eretz Yisrael, right? Reish Lakish was in Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Yochanan was, so he must have been. Rabbi Yochanan was in Eretz Yisrael, we know that. Reish Lakish was in Chavruta. Presumably he must have been there too, otherwise it wouldn't. They didn't have Skype. So, Machavim Zezeh, they love one another. Dahar Reish Lakish Harif, because Reish Lakish was Harif, very sharp. Machakim, and wise. Tuva, very wise. Have, he was. But Karele, Le Rabbi Meir, and he called Rabbi Meir Pekadosh. He was very wise and very sharp, yet he still called Rabbi Meir Pekadosh, holy man. The Kamachabib Le, in this he is Machabib Le, he's appreciating him. Umiyashev Etadavala Hikayem, and he is resolving the matter so that it stands. Yeah, that's the word of Rashi, but
top. Do we care to the top of the page on Rashi?
What? Do we, I read through it, there's nothing.
Okay.
Tov, let's do another bit. Ki hayati rabbi v'kama asu ki ha, like this. Just like we said that the Reish Lakish had such a love for Rabbi Meir, and Rashi explains that's because in Eretz Yisrael they had such a great love for one another. This is like what happened he had the Yativ Rebbe. When Rebbe was sitting, Ka'amar, and he said, Asur lahatmin et atzoneh. It's forbidden to lahatmin, to do hatmana on soneh, on things that are cold. What hatmana? Shabbat. Hilchot Shabbat. Hilchos Shabbos. Hilchos Shabbos is something called hatmana. It's not one of the common Shabbos things. You've got your 39 alachot, you've got muksa, and then you've got something called hatmana, which usually gets about a paragraph at the back of one of those Hilchot Shabbos books. On hatmana, or the laws of the kitchen. You see it in the laws of the kitchen, usually to do with the platter. Hatmana. Hatmana is, I'm just trying to think of the word in English.
Insulation.
Insulation. Your insulation. There's a law which is that you're not allowed to insulate hot food on Shabbos. Insulate. Insulate. Yes. What does that mean? You're not allowed to stick a cover around it.
But you can do that before Shabbos.
No, so there's different ways of doing it. There's different ways, different leniencies, and therefore you have to look at the paragraph in the book on the Shabbos kitchen as to what you can do and what you can't do. But basically, there's stuff you can do before Shabbat. Also, if you're not covering it completely, that's also allowed. But basically, you're not allowed to cover hot food, right? Because it adds to the cooking. And one of the reasons, different hashkafas, one of the reasons it adds to the cooking process. Even if it's already cooked, it's an astringency that even if it's already cooked, it's still hot. You have to look over there. It's not such a clear halakha as to why it exists and what it's based on. People have platter covers. That's where you can buy them in the most religious shops. Very pretty. Cover the platter. So usually what I've seen, and I don't know, I'm not an expert in this field by any means, is that they are allowed on the basis that that people are relying on the leniency that as long as it's not completely covered, it's allowed. Meaning that there's probably some space underneath between the cover and the thing. But in theory, if it covered it completely, it should be prohibited. Should be a sort to do that, to cover the platter.
Now, what I've seen in the States is they would have a large kumkum and it's covered in an insulating cloth that's made the same shape as a kumkum.
Right, so if they did it before Shabbos, and or it doesn't cover the top, but it only covers the outsides, it might be the best. Okay. Might be. Don't know. Lord Hatmana. Google Hatmana. Go to your bookshelf and
I haven't seen the installation in Eretz Israel. I've seen it in the States, but not here. Or kumkum.
Yeah, they're more strict on Hatmana here. A lot of things here. They're more strict. Anyway, so what's the what are we saying over here? So here, Rebbe made a ruling about hatmana on sonen. What's sonen? Sonen is cold food. Right? Normally, there's no like lefi halacha today. We don't hold there's any hatmana on cold food, but Rebbe held there was. Why? Because he didn't want. He was making a gezeira. He didn't want people to confuse it. Allow insulating of cold food, right? To you, he didn't want you to stick your cold beer in the ice cooler and put down the lid and insulate your cold beer, right? Because people might say, "See, insulation's fine. No difference between hot and cold. You're allowed to insulate cold. You're allowed to insulate hot too." Right, so Rebbe didn't want that to happen. So Rebbe made a gezeira that you're not allowed to insulate cold. Amar l'fanav Rabbi Yishmael v'Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yishmael, the son of Rabbi Yossi, said before him, said to Rebbe, Abba hitir lahatmin etzonim. My father, said Rabbi Yishmael, permitted people to insulate cold food. Malahem, Kavah HaRezakeh. Rebbe said to them, Amalahem, he said, Kavah HaRezakeh. already the elder one has ruled, has given a ruling on this, right? Meaning Rabbi Yishmael's father, right? Therefore, he retracted his opinion. Rebbe, who was the head of Gadol Ador, the head of the Nasi, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, Rebbe, right? The one who put together all the Mishnayot, Gadol said that he would give up on his own opinion in favor of Rabbi Yishmael's father. Amar Rab Papa said about this, come and see how beloved they are one to another. The Inu Rebbe Yossi Kayen Hayaka Fuf Yoshev Lifnei Rebbe. Because even if Rebbe Yossi, who was Rabbi Yishmael's father, had been alive, he would have sat before Rebbe. Right, Rebbe was huge. And if Rebbe Yishmael's father had been alive, he for sure would have bowed down to Rebbe's greatness and said, well, if Rebbe says you're not allowed to do it, I'm retracting my ruling. But Rebbe waived his ruling in favor of the elder sage. How do we know that Rebbe Yossi would have been subordinate to Rebbe? The Ha Rebbe Yishmael, but Rebbe Yossi, Malay Makom Avotav. Because Rebbe Yishmael, the son of Rebbe Yossi, was his father's successor, meaning he took his place. He was followed with his father's shitot. And he himself sat before Rebbe. So we see, just like Rebbe Yishmael bowed down to Rebbe, and he was following his father's shitot in everything, so too his father would have also done that. And about this he still said the elder sage has already given his ruling. So we see that Rebbe gave such precedence to what the Gemara is calling love between this one and that one, which is interesting, because you would have thought that, I would have thought that halacha and Torah and truth and making sure Am Yisrael don't stumble in laws, right, is more important than changing my opinion because out of chaviv zelazeh. But apparently not. Apparently, the chaviv zelazeh is more important than Rebbe's justification for, at least in this case, for having a different rule. Clearly it was a gezerah, so it's not a halacha, it's a rabbinic gezerah, so he didn't have to make it. So I guess weighing up the benefit of making the gezerah against the benefit of going with the opinion of the elder sage. It's an interesting discussion why that was allowed. Yeah. Okay.